Welcome back to Hoops, everybody. Hoops, everybody. To Hoops HD, everybody. This is the
week. Should we just start over? We've 2 seconds into the show, Chad makes a mistake.
Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is the weekly Hoops HD report. It is Monday evening, January 16th, around 9 p.m. Eastern. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. On my sides up top here, he just disappeared. There he is. He's back in. David Griggs,
yeah.
John Tytel. Right. Down below, we got John Slica. And joining us again from bracketeer.org, it is Rocco Miller. We've got Rocco is actually at 3 or 4 of the games right now, I believe, as well, right?
Yes, right. Rocco, busy night
tonight. It's amazing.
It really is.
We've got a lot to get to here. It was a busy weekend, especially a lot of good games on Saturday. A lot of ranked teams losing. I think like 9 ranked teams lost on Saturday. Polls are all switched around this week. But I thought we'd start, as we've been starting a lot of these recent shows, with one of our favorite features, of course, and that is the old blind resume. If we can get this to work here, give me a second. It should be coming up here. All right, we've got a blind resume here.
Chad, I can see them. The resumes are on the screen. It's not blind.
Okay. Rocco.
The resumes
at you. Tell me, left, right, or are they about even? What are you looking at here? Without giving away who they are, in case you did guess it. You know, let's have a little debate before, if you did guess it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see many road wins for either team, which I don't like. But
only
at least the
one
team
between them, yeah.
Yeah, at least the team on the left's got a couple neutrals. I guess those are both 1B. The combo of neutrals on the right are a little better because you have a 1A and a 1B with a home 1B mixed in. Obviously, the losses. Yeah, I guess I go with the team on the right just based on the top. But yeah, you probably have to dig deeper to get to the truth.
Yeah, Griggs, what do you think? You agree with it, the team on the right, or are they about even?
I'm not a huge fan of either one. 226. I think I knew who the one on the right is. I'm almost certain I know who the one on the right is. So because I know who it is, and because we've been in an argument over whether or not this team is actually any good, I'm picking the one on the left, even though they don't have any road wins.
Okay.
Just be warned, the team on the right is
too. Is that one road win, Boston College, there on the right?
Well, Tytel, I was going to go to you, but Slica just ruined it here by telling everyone who the teams are. Yes, and I brought these two teams up for a very specific reason related to you, Mr. Griggs, because you – posted your own personal bracket on the website today.
It was brilliant.
And you had the team on the left as the team on the left as a 5 seed, and the team on the right as an 11 seed, which I felt was absolutely ridiculous. Left, we got Arkansas. Right, we have Duke. Griggs, were you dead wrong when you put Arkansas as a 5 seed?
I wasn't wrong when I put Duke as an 11.
Okay.
Road win against Boston College.
These are teams that are, especially this Arkansas team has really been going in the wrong direction, but I don't get the hate, Tytel. I don't get the hate on this Duke team because this is not a bad resume at this point in the season. This is not great, but it's not awful. It's not 11 seed.
Agreed. No tier 3, tier 4 losses. That road loss at Wake could end up as a tier 1, depending on how Wake does, as I'll tell you guys shortly when we get there. I wish they had done more recently other than beat Pitt in January, because they haven't done much else in January, although we're only a couple weeks in. But Iowa win looking better by the day, Ohio State win looking worse by the day, Xavier win looking fantastic by the day.
Yeah, absolutely, is looking fantastic. And this Arkansas team, though, on the other hand, Rocco, I just see this as a team going in the absolutely wrong direction. Has now lost 3 in a row, 4 out of 5, and has been San Diego State and nobody at this point.
It's interesting. It made me go back to Musselman's first year the other day when their game went final against Vanderbilt. Every year under Musselman, they've had a slow start in SEC play. So this is actually par for the course. I think last year they were 3-4. The year before, 0-3. The year before, 1-3. They've gotten off to a slow start in every year with Muss, and it's worked out okay, except for his first year when they didn't make the tournament. But every other year they've not only made the tournament but went far into the tournament. So I would say cool your jets, let things play out. They're still figuring out the rotations. The one thing I will say about Arkansas while we're on them is, really, I got actually got to cover this matchup last year, the Elite Eight, Duke versus Arkansas. Clay Mosier was the head assistant coach. And I noticed, I got to sit behind the Arkansas bench that day. He did all of the X's and O's during timeouts, all the preparation. Musselman spent his time arguing with the refs. I think that was really key that Mosier retired. Arkansas is still trying to figure out who's responsible for what, I think, as a staff. And, you know, those are the little things that matter when you're in a league like the SEC. Games are won on the margins. I think they'll figure it out because the talent's crazy. But I just think that's an interesting point, and I think they're still trying to figure out, you know, who's responsible for what on the staff.
Yeah, and but look, this game against Vanderbilt that they lost this weekend at Vanderbilt, at the end of the first half, there was a string of technicals. It was seven consecutive technical free throws they shot and then got the ball, and you still lose the game by 13 points. I don't know how you do that.
And the Vanderbilt, sorry, I don't know the kid's name, but the Vanderbilt student manager fainted and got stretchered off the court right around those technicals. And that actually just created a weird, like, environment in what is already a weird environment, Vanderbilt's home court. And I think the Commodores, from their perspective, they rallied around that kid getting stretchered to the hospital just before halftime. So it was just a wild game. I was listening on the radio when all that happened.
It wasn't just a student manager, but I think one of the Razorback players was taunting Melora Brown, one of the Vandy players. And the fact that none of the Arkansas players got teed up just made Vandy even more furious. I think one of the technicals was also assessed against Stackhouse.
That's right. Yeah, he got teed.
One of the multiple technicals in that whole situation there. And let's start things here off, though, in the SEC, where Stalica, when we look at the top of the standings, we see Alabama, one of the best teams in the nation. We also see Texas A&M at 4-0. Now, is this a bit of a mirage for A&M at this point, or is this team starting to turn things around?
I think one of the things they were showing on the screen as far as Texas A&M is that Buzz Williams' team happened to go up against four new coaches in this league. So one of them being Gates over at Missouri. They beat them by 18, and they just destroyed South Carolina. I mean, the final score was even worse than that. I think they were tripling the Gamecocks at one point in the second half. That's how brutal that game had gotten right there.
It was 268-3, I think.
If Texas A&M is a bit of a mirage, Tytel, how about Georgia? Is this team suddenly maybe a little bit for real, especially with their wins this week against both Mississippi schools?
Barely, but I'll give it to you. So they've only lost one game in the past month. The irony is that it was to Coach Mike White's former team in Gainesville. They haven't beaten a single top 100 team in non-con play, but looking decent, wins over Auburn, Mississippi State, and Mississippi. Couldn't have picked a worse time, however, to take a road trip to Lexington on Tuesday, because the Cats have their mojo back, as everybody saw over the weekend. But they're getting it done by guarding the three-point line. 28% allowed from behind the arc is number 8 in the nation. Seems like the only problem they have had recently is homesickness. They had a freshman named Kyron Lindsay enter the transfer portal last month, and he's from Denton, Texas, and committed to Texas Tech last week.
Rocco, I pulled up the next opponent here on the left here, Kentucky, and we were just about, everyone's ready to give up on them. And then they go to Tennessee over the weekend and win there on the road. Made everything all better, or on the way to making everything all better?
Certainly helped.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can spin it, right, Chad? So I think in one sense, you could look at this optically and say, okay, when Kentucky's interested, they're going to show up, which, you know, clearly they were interested. I don't know how they got to the level where they're capable of losing at home to South Carolina, but it's in the books. It happened. They have to live with it and move on with it. But the other interesting thing was, from a personnel standpoint, they get Toppin and Wallace back for the big game against Tennessee. They performed well. But at the same time, I think they lost Damian Collins and one other key player. So they get two back, they lose two. This mix seems to be playing a lot better than the previous mix. And so I don't think Kentucky's really got their full rotation in order. They've had injuries off and on. But now with this road win at Tennessee, compared to the rest of the bubble, they obviously stand out. They're going to win a lot of comparisons for bracketology purposes down the road, as long as they stay in the hunt, which with their abundance of talent, I assume they will. And so, yeah, we'll see if Tytel's right, if this is the springboard or, you know, maybe a home game against Georgia, they're less interested in fall again. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, Rocco, I was just going to say, if you look at the schedule, it is very favorable. I mean, other than the Kansas game and the SEC Big 12 Challenge, there's a lot of winnable games ahead here.
But go ahead, yeah, Rocco, let me ask you this. I mean, well, anybody, but I know Rocco is a bit of a scout, too, as much as he is a, you know, analyzer of resumes and a committee guessing expert. One of the things that if you noticed about this game was how Kentucky was so prepared for it. Tennessee, a transition team. I don't want to say they had no transition baskets, but I remember watching long stretches of it thinking Tennessee has not had a single fast break point in this game. Among everything else, among their personnel, wasn't this what the most prepared you've seen Kentucky all season? And it's not even close.
Yeah, it's not even close it's not close because in their other, you know, they beat Michigan overseas, but that was even kind of an ugly performance where they pulled it out by four. Particularly textbook. Maybe the Louisville home win, but you have no idea because Louisville's so bad.
You wouldn't know. This was, I mean, they came into this game with a perfect game plan and executed it beautifully on the road.
I think it was astounding.
I think
one could assume, and without asking Coach Cal, probably wouldn't be fair to put this in cement, but one could assume they started the week just preparing for Tennessee and overlooked South Carolina entirely and just basically thought they could throw any five guys out there and beat South Carolina because the preparation and the execution for the Tennessee game was so on point, as you've well articulated.
Right, and we saw this from Kentucky in the latter part of, well, the second half of last season, minus the round of 64 game. One of the things about Kentucky was that they, Calipari, people don't give him credit for being a good bench coach, and I get it. He's got so much talent, but I would argue a lot of the time he is, and he certainly was Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've seen this in previous years where, you know, they get off to these slow starts, then league play starts to pick up. It's a team like Arkansas where I'm just like, don't judge really much until we get to February because the talent's there. He's gearing his teams historically to be ready for March. He's less concerned about these November through end of January results as long as he can sprinkle in some decent wins along the way. And this was much more than a decent win. It's an elite win.
Yeah. Right.
Just quickly before we move on, we do have to get moving on here. The team that had an awful week this week from the SEC was the Missouri Tigers. They lost a pair of games at Florida and at Texas A&M, both of which were not looking like tournament teams. And Stalica, you know, this is a team that is definitely heading in the wrong direction, I guess, along with Arkansas.
I would probably say the Texas A&M game would have been slightly more forgivable just because Uncle Buzz's crew has been riding through, like, shall we say, a buzzsaw. Florida, they hadn't had any wins of note going into that game right here. If you look at Arkansas, that might be a winnable game. Alabama, not likely.
Oh, yeah. That Alabama team is good. Let's take a look at that upcoming schedule in the SEC real quick here on the right. Beginning with Tennessee with a road trip to Mississippi State coming up here tomorrow night, which could be a bit of a dangerous game in that Georgia-Kentucky game we mentioned. The rest of the games are there as well. Alabama at Missouri on Saturday. What else do we have?
Arkansas there? At Missouri Wednesday, that being a little bubblicious. I mean, you'd have to be
two teams that are not playing very well right now. Something's got to break, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not like one of them's a five seed or anything. That would be ridiculous.
Let's jump over to the Big Ten Conference and let's start with the game that we actually saw today, and not the Illinois winning at Minnesota. I'm talking about this Purdue winning this game at Michigan State today, Griggs. This was a heck of a game between two very good teams. And even though maybe Michigan State's resume isn't quite there, I thought this Michigan State team showed a lot, even though they lost at home to Purdue.
Yeah, and they've been showing a lot. Like, let's pull it up, actually. Well, I guess we can pull up both of them. Purdue is – it tops out high. There's nothing bad on it other than a loss to Rutgers, which with that game, I think I was far more impressed with Rutgers than I was disappointed in Purdue. Michigan State, they kind of, I don't want to say they fell off my radar, but they weren't a team that was really grabbing my attention all that much, but they certainly have it now. When you look at this resume, the win at Kentucky, it came at a time, who knows, I think that game was on a battleship or something. Or was it? No, that was the champ. That was the Champions Classic. They played Gonzaga on a battleship.
Yes.
But winning at Penn State, winning at Wisconsin, really good. So there's some decent stuff on there. And then when you watch them play, they played fantastic today. And they've won away from home, albeit one of those wins was at Portland. But, I mean, I like this profile, and I like the way that they're playing. And I think that they're heading towards their signature 6-7 seed, and then they're going to go from there to the Final Four.
The other team, I want to discuss a couple of these teams here, but Titel, Iowa is a team that everybody gave up on when they lost to Eastern Illinois. I'm loving the way this team's playing right now, though.
I'm going to explain why you shouldn't have given up on them. They did start 8-6. I get it. But four wins in a row, Indiana, Rutgers, Michigan, Maryland. I think they're back inside the bubble. I have them as a 10 seed after I had them out of the bracket like just a week ago. The most amazing part of this winning streak, they did it without Coach Fran McCaffrey's son, Patrick, who stepped away from the team a couple of weeks ago for mental health reasons. And I know about the Eastern Illinois loss. And they were missing not one, but two of their best three-point shooters that night, Patrick's brother, Connor McCaffrey, and Chris Murray. I get that it's never good to lose to a team that's 7-12. I get it. But if I'm on the selection committee, I can understand why that game was an anomaly. They were missing two of their best players.
I still think they have to win that game. They could be missing their four best players. They got to beat the 338 team nation. Right. But I don't care, because what they've done on the good side, in my opinion, makes up for this Eastern Illinois. And I'm personally willing to overlook that game almost at this point.
Yeah, and Titel does have a point. When you look at the Eastern Illinois game, their next game was Nebraska, and they did not look good in that one either. I know it was on the road, but Nebraska's, you know, they need binoculars to see the NIT, to take a line from Rocco, I think. And they got boat raced in that game. So, like, when you go from – that is a really, really bad 8-day stretch. You take that out, and I know that you could. I know that the committee won't and shouldn't. But if you take that out, Chad's right. This team, for 95% of the season, has easily looked like a top 30, maybe even a top 20 team without those two losses.
Yep. And the next thing I want to discuss here, Rocco, is my team, my Rutgers Scarlet Knights, breaking the top 25 of the 8 people this week. Overtime win over Ohio State, win at Northwestern on a last second shot by Cam Spencer, the new hero who should be first team Big Ten. Your thoughts on my team, though?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's obviously been a wild one in terms of how a lot of the games have finished, you know, some good, some bad. Getting revenge on Ohio State last night, I thought was necessary, kind of get the basketball gods back on your side with that Buckeye battle. But the road win at Purdue, it's Purdue's only loss right now. So the longer that goes on and continues to be a truth, I think it makes Rutgers stand out against a ton of teams they'll be compared against. So right now, the interesting thing is, resume wise, because they lost to Temple, because they have multiple Q2 losses, they're sitting with a resume around the 40th. I think it's 41st in SOR, but their predictives are measuring very well. I think their average right now is 13 on the predictive. So they have two extremes going on, and kind of the opposite of what we're used to with Rutgers. I think usually Rutgers' resume is stronger and predictives aren't there. This year it's the opposite. So it's really interesting. I think very talented team with Pykele. Obviously in the Big Ten, it's more just about staying healthy above 500. And if they do that, they've got the wins already to carry them to a bid. And if it goes at this trajectory, heck, they're in the discussion, I would think, right now for protected seed.
Wow. I got to use the John Titel logic here, that if you're going to discount the Eastern Illinois game, we got to discount the Temple loss. Both Paul Mulcahy and Caleb McConnell were both out for that game. I'm using the Titel logic here.
Boy, well, this is how we're doing it. When we look at San Jose State, I can't wait to discount some of that.
Well, the thing is like in both of those examples, Chad, it's not as bad as it seems, but it's also not ignorable either. It's somewhere in the middle. Like it's one piece of your 30 piece of pizza season, right? So you have to take it for what it's worth. It's a part of your story. You have to own it, but you got all this other stuff going well, that's going to overshadow it. And what we've seen from the selection committee in recent years is they love the predictives and some of that for the seeding, and that could really shoot Rutgers up the board the way it stands right now.
Stalika, I pulled up on the left here, Ohio State. I know you're an Ohio guy here. I got to ask you about it. With this loss at Rutgers, you know, with the awful, awful home loss to Minnesota, are the Buckeyes suddenly on the bubble?
I think you have to throw it to up to something other than just bad luck right here, given that number 359 ranking right here. The Buckeyes do not have the excuse of injuries that teams like Rutgers and Iowa have right here.
And you got to throw it out there here. That the Rutgers home win, the Big Ten reviewed the play the day after and said that basket should not have counted. This team could be sitting here at 9-8 and clearly on the bubble or below the bubble right
below
now.
Below it. Yeah.
And they wouldn't have the strength of schedule that Creighton would have either.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick look at the upcoming schedule here. There's a lot more. We could spend another hour on the Big Ten with teams like Penn State and Northwestern and Wisconsin, but
I like all three of those. I'm glad you at least mentioned them because I like Northwestern. I know they're coming off a loss, and Whiskey, I still don't understand why the net doesn't like them, but they're good.
If you look at this upcoming schedule, you want to circle almost every single one of these games. I mean, you can almost say throw away the Minnesota games, but even then, it's a home game at least against Purdue. So that does. Let's try to keep things rolling along here because we are going pretty slow for our show. ACC.
Slow
next.
And steady wins the race.
ACC.
Oh, screw this league. Let's skip it.
One game, one result that's not quite on there yet is Miami did come back tonight. They were trailed most of the game. They came back to beat Syracuse tonight. But Griggs, how about the first place by two games Clemson Tigers here?
It's pretty remarkable. And if we pull them up, like I know you're about to do here, I think that their schedule is a little bit front loaded. I really like that win at Pitt. But Duke hasn't done much on the road. NC State really hasn't either. And the toughest game of their conference schedule to date might be the one that they're playing next at Wake Forest. Although the Pitt win was really good. But when you look at it, if they can get by that one, their next four games are not only winnable, but it would be disappointing if they lost any of those. We're looking at 11-1, 12-0 start here. But then when you go to North Carolina and to Virginia, I don't know. Their schedule just seems really light.
Well, what about their next opponent here, Titel, the Wake Forest Demon Deacons? This is another team that's been surprising so far.
Started 10-5, won three in a row to get to 13-5. Rough schedule this week. Host Clemson Tuesday, then host Virginia Saturday. They're getting it done from behind the arc. 38%, number 30 in the country. The star has been senior point guard Tyree Appleby. Last year at Florida, 11 points, 4 assists a game. Terrible shooter, though, 36%. This year, 18 points, 6 assists a game, shooting 47%. Very great improvement.
Yeah, absolutely. And Rocco, when we look at the rest of this conference here, I think there's a lot of bubble that you're looking at it when you look at this league at this point, not only those teams, but also Pitt and the NC States and the like.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, it's tough to separate right now. I think if Clemson wasn't 7-0 in the league, they would be part of that group as well. I think eventually they might be a bubble team. So certainly keep them in your bubble planning. But I would say, like Pittsburgh, Wake, NC State, Clemson, you know, Virginia Tech off to a horrible start in the league, but they did pretty well in the non-conference. So get a couple wins on track for the Hokies. They're back in that mix. And it's really just Louisville, Georgia Tech, Notre Dame having pretty down years and really not going to be able to play their way back in.
Louisville's having a down year. There's the understatement of the century.
That is a hot take. Wow.
Thanks. Appreciate that. That is
But the
Florida State a little bit too, but they got three league wins. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, Florida State showed a little bit of life, although they, you know, I thought that was a trap game actually for Virginia going down there this week, and Virginia was able to pick up the road win. Virginia, who, despite being two games behind Clemson, I think is the best team in this conference, and the metrics, I think, will back that up. They're going to be hosting Va Tech and then going to Wake this week, so it's a very interesting week here with the rivalry game and then the Wake Forest road game.
Chad, why do we have Notre Dame's 1993 football schedule in here? Florida State and Boston College.
That's a good one. Notre Dame's going to play football this week. Miami at Duke is another big game here on Saturday.
Well, the type of year they've been having in basketball, why not give it a shot? You put some football players out there, they can play.
Actually, a couple of interesting Saturday games. The Miami Duke game, also the NC State North Carolina game on us coming up on Saturday as well. Conference full of some of the best teams in the nation is the Big 12, including what I think is the best team in the nation, Stalika, in the Kansas Jayhawks. They somehow found a way to beat Oklahoma on Tuesday, and then followed up with another close win over on Saturday over Iowa State.
This has been a season of cold walks for the Jayhawks right here, but as the sign says in the fog, abandon hope, all ye who enter, or something like that.
Abandon all hope, ye who enter here. That's Dante that said that. And they ripped that off.
And Oklahoma, for that matter, it's like no one can seem to finish against the Jayhawks for whatever reason right here.
Well, they're pretty good. I mean, you know, there is that. This game tomorrow.
Yeah, Rocco, we got a fascinating game tomorrow between Kansas and Kansas State. And this K-State team on the right there had been looking so good. And then they had that game at TCU where they just didn't show up, I thought.
Yeah, I think a lot of the, trials and tribulations caught up to them. That's going to happen in this league. They had the OT emotional win at Baylor, the crazy 116-point win at Texas the week before, kind of cruising that Oklahoma State home game. But I think they were due kind of a butt-whooping just based on the fact that they're winning a lot of these games on the margins. You go back to the Grand Cayman Classic. I mean, if Nevada doesn't miss free throws, Nevada beats them in the semifinals. Then they get a miracle shot to beat LSU in the finals. Yeah. So Kansas State's been, they got blown out at Butler. I love what Jerome Tang does. I mean, he's just getting so much out of Marcus Noel, a Sun Belt player just a couple of years ago. And the story of Keontae Johnson coming all the way back from his tragic fall at Florida and now playing so well back to his full potential. It's an awesome story, but I just, just from a ceiling standpoint, I don't know that Kansas State's really going to stay in the top 10 or 15 the rest of the year. They're going to have days like the TCU day. But I do know tomorrow when they play Kansas, they're going to be amped. And I think Tang had a really awesome quote today. I'm trying to remember along the lines of what he said. Just something along the lines of Kansas has been living rent free in our heads for 20 years. That ends tomorrow. Something like that. Check that out. But these guys are going to be fired up. That place is going to be on fire. And I will not be shocked if they get that win tomorrow.
Tytel, on the left there, I brought up the Texas Longhorns, a team I know you want to discuss here, who continue to find ways to win despite their head coach being ousted.
Picked up a pair of single-digit home wins over TCU and Texas Tech last week. Only two losses are in overtime to Illinois at Madison Square Garden and to Kansas State a couple of weeks ago when the Wildcats shot 60% from the field and made 31 of 33 free throws. I thought they were going to fall apart after his arrest and firing Coach Beards, but Rodney Terry's kept the train on the tracks. I have them as a 2 seed. They're going to be tested this week on the road at Iowa State Tuesday, at West Virginia Saturday. Little worried that super frosh Dylan Mitchell might have hit the proverbial freshman wall. In his last non-conference game last month, 16 points on 8 of 9 shooting. In 5 conference games since then, 22 combined points and has missed all 3 of his free throws.
Briggs, I got to ask you about one other team in this conference because you had them in your bracket that you did this morning, and I'm trying to figure out how a team that's 0-5 in this conference should be in any bracket here. West Virginia, it's a very weird profile because they've only lost to good teams, but if you've got to win a game sooner or later, don't you?
Yeah, I think the win at Pittsburgh, especially as decisive as it was.
It's okay.
It's okay. Well, it's not like I had them on the 4 line. But like, I kind of had them hovering around the bubble, and it was just, you look at the loss at Xavier, the loss at Oklahoma, the loss to Purdue, the loss to Kansas, and the loss to Kansas State. Those teams are something like 186-1 at home or
don't you have to win a game sooner or later?
you know, sooner or later. So, I mean, I don't like Western. I mean, it's not, I'm not big on them. I selected them because it's a 68 team field.
Tytel, did you have West Virginia in?
I thought so. Let me check.
Okay. Yeah,
maybe, I have them as a nine seed.
I think I had them lower than that.
Okay. Can you? I just don't understand it because I get the strength of schedule. It's amazing, but
it is easy to poke holes in this. It is a Swiss cheese resume. Oh, you're talking to Tytel. I'm sorry.
The win over at Pitt is good. The win over UAB is good. When they lost to Kansas, they were missing one of their best players, Johnson. They haven't really lost anybody bad. They've lost to a bunch of great teams in the Big 12 and Purdue and on the road at Xavier. So it's more of a no bad losses rather than a ton of good wins. But
if this team could not lose a single bad game all season and finish five games under 500 with the schedule they have left here.
In which case, I assure you, I'm not going to have another nine seed.
Yeah.
Okay. Ooh, I am totally went to the wrong page there. Let's go over here. How about that? That was the wrong page.
Right. But this conference, I had six protected seeds out of this. That's ridiculously good.
And look at this upcoming schedule here. Stalica, I mean, every single game here, again, circle all of them. Bedlam on Wednesday, for example. Yeah.
And we'll talk about the Octagon of Doom first right here, and then Bedlam, and if we're looking for one to really single out on Saturday, I probably would say Texas at West Virginia as far as a sign of desperation for the Mountaineers.
Yeah, I think it's a big week for West Virginia. This is a chance at home to pick up notable wins against TCU in Texas. Let's jump over to the Big East Conference. Stalica, let me stick with you for a second because your team, Xavier, heck of a week, home wins over Creighton and Marquette. You were at both those games too. And so was Rocco, I think, right?
Yeah, Rocco was there.
I mean, I've been with Rocco at a Marquette game one year. I can't say we were able to get that done this year here. We weren't seeing, Trayvon Blewett score his 2,000th point this year, but It felt like Xavier and Marquette probably would have run up the score even higher than they did, because when that game started, Tyler Kolick had 20 points in the first half and Sean Miller was getting furious at the team because they were just letting him score at will in the paint, but they made some adjustments at halftime. He only gets 5 points in the second half, and Sule Boom quickly becoming one of the most clutch free throw shooters in the final minutes of a game. Just get him to the free throw line, and he is just about automatic for the Musketeers. So he has definitely been a godsend as far as Miller and the transfer portal this year.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love Sule Boom. He started his career at San Francisco, and he was an awesome spark plug as a freshman with Jabari Abuye, who, of course, is about to be on the Miami Heat someday soon. But, to see him do that as a freshman, go to UTEP for 3 years, just gets better every year. And now doing it at the highest level of college basketball, really happy for that kid. He's an 88% free throw shooter, Stalica, you're mentioning. And, I think Xavier as a whole, they're going to have to get some big road wins down the stretch to stay in the top two or three seeds or whatnot. But what they're doing in Miller's first year with a collection of guys that either stayed or they brought in, like Boom, it's pretty fascinating. And credit to all those people involved out there.
Yeah, the road landmines are still to come. They got to go to Providence, to Marquette, to UConn. UConn lost four of their last five, by the way. Not in a long stretch. But it's hard to not be impressed with what they've done. And when you look at their losses all to good teams, and at least in two out of the three, and maybe all three, you get the sense that Xavier's better now than they were at the time of all three of those losses.
Right. We do need to move on here. We don't want to do a whole show about Xavier. So let's look at the rest of the Big East here. And Tytel, this Creighton team, kind of like West Virginia, we were discussing the Big 12, one of those head-scratching profiles with some great metrics, but, you know, kind of they need to get some wins, don't they? Although they picked up one of their best of the season this past week.
So this is kind of the definition of a home court hero. Over the past 6 weeks, 4-0 at home, 0-5 away from home. And 10-8, I understand that doesn't impress anybody, but I have them as an 11 seed, and here's why. Three of the losses without reigning Big East Defensive Player of the Year, Ryan Kalkbrenner. He's healthy now. Four of the other five losses, single digit, away from home, against protected seeds, Arizona, Texas, UConn, Xavier. They head to Butler Tuesday and then a much needed 8-day break before hosting St. John's. I understand if you want to leave them out of your bracket. I get it. But they're the only team to beat Providence since November.
There you go. This Providence team had been playing so well heading into that game. And Rocco, I want to talk about another team that's not playing well. We mentioned it already. UConn has lost 4 out of 5. When people talk about this team as a 2 seed, maybe even better than that, 1 seed.
Yeah, I mean, anytime Jordan Hawkins turns the ball over 7 times against St. John's, I mean, it's probably a bad formula as St. John's loves to create turnovers and get easy runouts. Shocking loss there in their last outing, losing by 11, you know, in Hartford to a St. John's team that typically chokes in all their big games. If that's not warning enough, you know, I think it was really easy to forgive the 3 losses because they were all tough road losses on the road. And I think you could argue to the 3 best teams. I think it was Xavier, Providence, and Marquette. But this St. John's game just exposed everything. Dan Hurley can use that tape as a lot of teaching moments for these kids. They get to go to Seton Hall Wednesday, home against Butler Sunday. So ideally this week.
A dangerous Seton Hall team has been playing a lot better recently too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Seton Hall's defense is ridiculous. So always tough to get buckets against a Shaheen Holloway team, as we know. But if they can navigate that storm this week and get right, I think they'll be okay long term. Still love the depth of the front court. Probably the best center tandem in the country. So we'll see what UConn can do from here. But, you know, every great team's got to have some bumps along the way.
Right. There's the rest of the standings in the conference. I know, Tytel, you wanted to do 2 or 3 hours on Georgetown. We just don't have the time for it tonight. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
But the upcoming games, some big games here, actually, with the Providence Marquette game coming up on Wednesday. That is, I think, the biggest game of the week here in this conference. Xavier is going to be at DePaul, then hosting Georgetown, so they get a pair of bye games. Pac-12 conference.
That's the calm before the storm.
Oh, the conference of champions.
Because Tytel, I know you don't want to discuss it. I'll ask Rocco about your team, about Arizona, and just, you know, did not even bother showing up on Saturday against Oregon. Or I guess it was at Oregon, right?
Yeah, it was the Oregon road trip. Yeah. Arizona, same thing happened. Similar, the game I was at when they played at Utah, lost that one by 15. It seems to me the biggest difference, I think, from this year to last year, their 13-point loss at home to Washington State was a stunner the week before. It's just that teams are, especially here in the conference, are much more prepared for the runouts, for the rim-to-rim action that Tommy Lloyd's group wants to do and has the athletes to leverage to do it. You know, Ballo had an amazing, you know, first 2 months. So I think the scouting report on them is, you know, Utah built the formula. Wazoo and Oregon were able to follow it to a T. Also got hot in, you know, from the offensive side of the ball. From their own perspectives. And I think Arizona now, it's their turn, kind of like what we just talked about with UConn, to that they got to readjust and throw some new wrinkles because they can't just bank on their system the way they had in the first couple months, because clearly teams are prepared. And they're not even losing to like the LA schools here. They're losing to some pesky wannabe bubble teams from the Northwest.
Yeah, and their next opponent is a USC team that Tytel is maybe – they're starting to put things together. They had a 2-0 week.
As long as I don't talk about Arizona, I'll talk all night about USC.
Except they're playing Arizona this week. So
at Arizona.
I walked into that one. They did start January with a pair of road losses at Wazoo and UCLA. Bounce back, home wins over Colorado and Utah. Hard to believe their interior defense could get any better. They're already second in the nation, 41% allowed from two-point range, but they're bringing in 7-foot-1-inch Vincent Iwuchukwu. 6 months ago, 5-star recruit who collapsed after suffering a major heart failure. Today, back on the court, he's 2-0 in his 2 games so far. He hasn't even scored a single point yet, so I don't want to oversell it, but he does have 2 of his next 3 against the aforementioned Wildcats and the Bruins. It's going to be fascinating to see if Coach Enfield uses him against those great big men like Tubelis and Ballo and Bona and guys like that.
And on the left there, after they play, well, actually, I'm sorry, after Arizona is going to be playing After they play USC, the next opponent after that's going to be UCLA and Salika. This UCLA team now won 13 in a row, you know, inching toward the one line, in my opinion. But I know Griggs won't agree with that. But what are your thoughts on them?
Well, the resume isn't going to scream one line, but the team is absolutely screaming one line right here. They're starting to develop the Cronin tendency as far as their defensive intensity, but he's got offensive weapons that he never really had while at Cincinnati. So they're going to be dangerous on multiple levels right here. But if they sweep this Arizona State and Arizona roadie, then we probably can start to have some serious conversations about UCLA cracking into the, maybe not the top line, but definitely the top two seed lines.
Well, if they sweep these three games, the game at Arizona will be a 1A game. The game at Arizona State and the game at USC will both be tier one games. Well, that's three tier one wins in a row if they can do this. I don't know if they can.
Five of their next seven are on the road. I could see them winning all seven. This UCLA team is really good. I wouldn't have them on the one line right now, but if they run through this gauntlet, you got to look at them as a one, don't you? Yeah. I mean,
yeah, absolutely. They're not far. They're not that far off as it is today. I think one of the biggest things missing is they haven't had a lot of road opportunities. You know, they got the Maryland win, and Stanford doesn't mean anything really, and the Washington schools. So now they, you know, this is their chance to fill the void that's really missing from a one seed profile. So if they do it, they're pretty much just hanging out, waiting for one of the four above them to fall.
Yeah.
There's only four games to watch, in my opinion, in the Pac-12 this week. They are the UCLA, USC teams at the Arizona schools. All four games have the potential to be really good games too, though. So circle those without a doubt.
I won't be watching Wazoo, Colorado, I don't think.
Griggs, the number one team in the nation, according to the polls, is the Houston Cougars. They just continue to pretty much roll. They struggled a little bit with South Florida this week for a little while.
They did.
Played with South food, I think, kind of thing.
Yeah, South Florida was right in there. And you kind of wonder, are they getting a little bit bored with their season? Because when you're consistently undermatched and you're consistently the showcase game every time you go on the road, you know, do you need something like there isn't a rabbit in front of you to chase anymore? You're just sort of biding your time until the NCAA tournament starts. I think a lot of teams in this situation don't play at 100% because they don't have to. And even if they drop a game, I still don't think it's indicative of how well they're going to play in the NCAA tournament. But it's hard to not really like this team a lot. The win at Virginia in particular, I mean, that's a probable projected seed win on the road.
Right. And one of the interesting games coming up, not this week, but the following week, though, Titles, they do have a road trip to UCF coming up here.
You're overlooking a big one, Chad.
The game at Tulane tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. It's sold out, baby. Tulane's won five in a row.
Let me ask.
I'm sure all their games are sold out.
Then Brett Rock, we go back to you for Tulane, but
Let's do that. I'm fired up to talk about Tulane.
Okay, Titel, how about UCF first?
I'll try to hustle through it to reserve some Tulane time. I really thought Johnny Dawkins had something special. He had a 13-4 record and a double overtime win over Memphis Wednesday, and then road loss at Tulane on Saturday. They do get the rest of this week off.
Yeah,
perfect. Before heading to South Florida on Saturday, exactly. Then they host the Cougars the following Wednesday. So one reason they did beat Memphis was free throw shooting. 33 of 37, only made it back to the line 12 times against Tulane, and injuries are starting to pile up. Point guard Darius Johnson has missed three in a row with a leg injury. 7-footer Michael Durr has missed two games with a thumb injury and might need surgery. So I think it's going to keep going down, unfortunately.
Rocco? Hey, a coach voted Tulane into their top 25 poll this week. So right. We got one vote, but you want to talk a little green wave here with the home loss to Fordham, go ahead.
Well, yeah. And I mean, earlier in the year, Jalen Cook missed some time. I know he missed two of the losses. And, you know, you look at Jalen Cook, he's probably the bona fide NBA player on this team by far. And you look at his usage rate, 31% usage rate, top 20 in the country. So they run basically everything through Jalen. And you have the three-headed monster of him, Kevin Cross, and Jalen Forbes. It's a reason why I had him in the bracket preseason. They're an extremely talented bunch when healthy. They're finally hitting their stride five in a row. I covered UCF a week ago in their home win against SMU. Really impressed with UCF. Tulane took them down by 8 just a couple days ago to tune up for this huge Houston challenge. And we saw UCF give Houston fits. We'll see if Tulane can finally deliver a knockout punch to Houston here in the American. And again, when you have a team like a Houston, it's kind of like a Gonzaga in the WCC in previous years. This is a chance to take a bite out of a Big Apple and start building, you know, a second, a third, a fourth resume, as I do think Tulane might start getting some looks if they can win this game. We already know UCF and Memphis are probably going to hover around the bubble the rest of the way.
Yeah, I just quickly pulled up that Memphis profile over there. You know, the how big would that, if they won that game at UCF last week, this profile would be looking like a tournament team as opposed to looking like a bubble team, which is where I think they are right now.
Yeah, I agree.
Never mind the fact that they needed a buzzer beater just to cover the win at Temple.
They did, but Temple was 4-1 going into that. And, you know, Temple's a fifth strong team in this league, and Cincinnati's a sixth. So I don't think this league is as bad as the last few years. I think we actually have like six pretty solid teams, and ideally for the league, three get in and maybe a long shot at four.
I think three would be pushing it, Rocco.
I
like Memphis there as a second team right now, but they got to move up in the standings a bit. But unless someone's going to steal the auto bid. There's the upcoming schedule. The big game is the Houston-Tulane game coming up tomorrow night. But take a look at Memphis as well. If they host Wichita State, they have a tough road trip to Cincinnati on Sunday. They could use road wins if they want to build that profile. Tytel, the game of the week in the Mountain West Conference happened in San Diego when the Aztecs actually went down at home to New Mexico.
Kind of shocking. They'd won 9 of 10 since Thanksgiving and then 9-point home loss to the Lobos last Saturday. You can't explain this one away with injuries, just with free throw shooting. 11 of 21 was atrocious. They get back on the road this week at Colorado State and Air Force. I still have them as a 6th seed. I'm not worried because they're a veteran team. Each of their top 9 scorers are juniors or seniors, and they're still looking good to make the tournament. But if I had told you in mid-January that they'd be one game ahead of some team named San Jose State in the standings, would you believe me?
Oh, San Jose State. I mean, let's pull them up.
Let's stop because I want to highlight the fact that Tytel just told us San Diego State has the very dangerous Front Range trip coming up this week at Colorado State and at Air Force. Stalico, what about the Lobos now with that win? You know, the team that last undefeated team and then blew a couple, but now real big bounce back.
New Mexico was coming off of a pair of back-to-back losses. Fresno State, always tricky to go into some of these road environments in the Mountain West. Losing to UNLV was probably a little bit of a tougher blow just because it's going to show up as tier three on a team sheet right here. San Diego State was really their last best shot at a quad 1A win right here. And they passed that test right here. Now they just got to avoid some of these landmines. They're going to be popping up like San Jose State and Air Force and Wyoming coming up.
Well, there are some good nets, though, here, Rocco. Teams like Utah State, which I think has a fraudulent net, but Boise State and Nevada, maybe a pair of decent teams.
Boise's good. Go ahead, Rocco.
Yeah, Boise's on a roll. You know, the crazy stat is the last two December, Januarys, Leon Rice is 23-2. Obviously, last year had that 15-game winning streak during this stretch and now crushing it during this stretch again. And it's not like they play slouches. They've had to go to UNLV, go to Wyoming, go to St. Louis. So it's not just home wins. And, you know, I think Boise's really hit their stride. They have a top 10 defense nationally. It's exactly how they did it last year. But right now they're actually the top offense in Mountain West games. Small sample size, has only played 5 league games thus far. But signs are really, really good. You know, DeGenhart's now a sophomore. Marcus Shaver's a great point guard. And Max Rice, the coach's son, is playing well as a senior. Boise's got a strong profile, a little bit of everything. But, I think they can overcome that home loss to South Dakota State. They're in pretty good shape right now.
Yeah, it's a very weird profile, too. They don't really have any wins over any tournament teams, but they have, they probably lead the nation in tier 2A wins.
I think Utah State's close. UNLV was there. Now they're probably not there. And St. Louis is a good road win. And A&M was a, you know, de facto road game as well.
They're all really good wins. It's just kind of a little bit of a strange looking profile.
That is the question. I mean, is there enough loose change there to add up to dollars? And I think there is. Yeah. There's something to be said about, their resume doesn't top out that high, but it's very good.
Well, but they've got the game at New Mexico and the game at San Diego State to come. Yeah. So there's chances here. And the home game at San Diego State as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got Nevada and New Mexico this week. So that's a big week for the Broncos starting tomorrow.
Yeah. Big game tomorrow, Nevada, Boise State. Also big game tomorrow on FS1 All Access, mic'd up Tim Miles against Richard Pitino. It might be worth a watch.
Absolutely.
And don't forget, Tim Miles has had a whole week to prepare. San Jose State had a bye this weekend. I mean, that's a dangerous game for New Mexico.
And he doesn't even need it. He just needs a few hours to prepare.
And then throw in as well, we have a front range game with Wyoming at Air Force tomorrow night. So it's a heck of a night in the Mountain West Tuesday.
Why wasn't this the feature conference, Chad? This is just an amazing, amazing week.
And New Mexico and Nevada coming next Monday, also one you want to circle a bit here.
It's going to be quite the clash of tempos between New Mexico and San Jose State, with number 20 going up against number 349.
Yeah.
Ty, let's jump over to the West Coast Conference. And let's talk about, according to the net, the best team in the conference. And that would be the number 8 net St. Mary's Gales, and not the number 9 net Gonzaga Bulldogs.
Started December with a 5-point loss to Houston and Fort Worth. They've won 10 of 11, only a 2-point loss to Colorado State. Road cupcake at Pepperdine on Thursday, and then a tough home game against Santa Clara on Saturday. I have them as a 7 seed, but if you want to succeed in March, you got to improve your free throw shooting 65%, especially considering each of their 4 losses were by 5 or less. So it has been biting them in the butt. Arizona, not the only team who wins games with foreigners like Tubelis and Balo and Kreese and Larson. Coach Randy Bennett, 4 of his top 7 guys are from abroad. 3 from Australia, Alex Dukas, Kyle Bowen, Harry Wessels, 1 from Lithuania. Rocco's favorite, Augustus Marshallonis.
And Griggs, I pulled up Gonzaga on the right here. A team that has a very impressive profile, but 3 of their last 4 games, I get they were tough road trips, but it was a close loss at Santa Clara, a really close loss at BYU, a close loss at San Francisco.
And by close, you mean trailed by seemingly 30 minutes or more in all 3 of those games, but still won. They don't look like, at least in the last couple of weeks, they've looked good, but when you're talking 1 seed, 2 seed, top 10, you know, what are they ranked now? 6th. They don't look like the 6th ranked team, but holy crap, look at this resume. It looks like the 6th ranked resume and maybe even higher. They've beaten Alabama. They've beaten Xavier, Michigan State, who we talked about, and their only losses, essentially, they've played 5 protected seeds away from home and beaten 2 of them, and that is damn good.
And Rocco, I want to discuss one other team. I put them on the left there, Santa Clara. Is it time to start paying a little bit of attention, especially with what they've got coming up this week? Because there's really no bad losses here.
You should always pay attention to Santa Clara. I love these guys. Okay. Brandon Podziemski, man. I think Pods is probably the most talented player in the league, which sounds insane because you have Gonzaga there, and obviously St. Mary's is very good, but Pods is an unbelievable talent. I mean, they just hit a home run with that transfer from Illinois. He can shoot from everywhere. He gets his teammates involved. I think I talk about him every time I've been on the show. Gives them a real chance to knock off a team like a Gonzaga or St. Mary's, who they narrowly lost to both so far. So, yeah, big week for them. BYU coming to town Thursday. They go right over here to St. Mary's on Saturday night.
This is a huge week for them. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I might be there Thursday, actually. Anyway, they are just a great team. Whether it's another NIT year or not, what Sendek and his staff have been able to do talent-wise is night and day from what they were doing years before last year, and turn the program around. So it's exciting. And I think the other thing to note is, Chad, you called it out. Gonzaga is winning these games narrowly, but I think for the first time in years, the WCC tournament, you could actually have a bid thief if it is like a Santa Clara or a BYU, because the margins aren't as big as they used to be.
They do still play that elongated ladder format, though. So Gonzaga, assuming they're the one seed, will get the bye to the semifinals. But
which
they will.
I like that for under the radar conferences, not for conferences like this one. Just do the straight up seeding.
Yeah,
and you don't need the ladder. You don't need to protect your first place team.
It would only be, it would only be one extra game for like the third and fourth place team, so it's not unwinnable for that from that position. I should also add that Loyola Marymount's playing very well as well. They're just, you know, they're still letting teams like Pacific beat them, but they did beat BYU just a couple weeks ago, and I think they're playing, you know, Cam Shelton's having a great year, and I don't think you can sleep on the Lions.
There's the upcoming schedule for the week. Gonzaga is going to be hosting Loyola Marymount at App Pacific. We already mentioned what St. Mary's and Santa Clara are going to be doing. Last few weeks we discussed them. We're going to discuss them again. They're still in the top 25 now in both polls is College of Charleston.
Let's get them both. Oh, can we get both profiles side by side, or are we doing one?
I figured I'd throw these guys up there first, just because especially tonight they went and they absolutely pounded William & Mary earlier today, a William & Mary team that had just won at UNC Wilmington, which was the second best team in the conference. So this Charleston team continued to just pick up wins. I'll go ahead and pull up their team sheet here, though.
Yeah, it wasn't surprising that they pounded William & Mary. It was very surprising that Bill & Mary won at Wilmington.
Okay. Look at the remaining schedule, that they're just, it doesn't seem to be any significantly difficult games left, especially now on the road. They've got a couple home challenges with Hofstra and UNC Wilmington, but that's it. But I know, Rocco, you wanted to discuss the other team that we are welcoming onto the radar, into the Hoops HD report for the first time in school history. AP poll, the Florida Atlantic Owls are number 24 out of
conference. Let me say congratulations to Florida Atlantic for the first time in school history on the Hoops HD report. This is a big deal for them.
Rocco, you've been following this team very closely, I know.
Yeah, no, it's been a blast. I got to be down there 11 days ago when they beat UAB down the stretch. And since that time, they had another tough one with Charlotte where they won down the stretch, a tough one down the road at FAU where they won. And tonight, the Western Kentucky game, even for a half, as we talked about before we came on, and blew them away in the second half with just, you know, relentless attack of a non-existent Western Kentucky defense. And the thing I really like about Florida Atlantic is it's a different hero every night type of team, just such a balance. John L. Davis comes off the bench, but the last couple of weeks, he's just been an unbelievable spark in the second half. Did it again tonight, 12 points in the second half of his 14. The game I was at with UAB, he had 36 for the game, but almost 30 in the second half. Vlad Golden in the middle at 7-1 is a major problem for a lot of teams, not only in the CUSA, but I think in the NCAAs, if the Owls keep this going and get to the dance. And he's backed up by a guy named Giancarlo Rosado, who's a much more wider frame, who they had to use a lot more just from a matchup standpoint from UAB. And so I think, you know, we're going to talk a lot about their resume down the road. I think it's clearly better than Charleston's already. They've got a road Florida win, a sweep over North Texas. Now they've got, UAB still qualifies as Q2 at home. They'll get to go to UAB in a couple weeks. So I think they're in a point now where their metrics are great. And I think Florida's going to do better. Their only loss is Ole Miss without Michael Forrest in that game. Don't know if the committee will care or not. I certainly care. I've watched almost all their games, and I could tell they were not their usual Florida Atlantic selves that day. But otherwise, this team's just such a treat to watch. And I think they've got some real staying power to be a Sweet 16, maybe an Elite 8 team, if it stays the way it is without any injuries down the road.
You know, if the season had just started on November 12th, we'd be looking at two undefeated teams right here. They both lost on November 11th.
11. That's Nigel Tufnell Day, by the way. That's for you Spinal Tap fans. It goes to 11.
Tytel, let me ask you as a committee guessing expert here. Assuming that both these teams lose in their conference tournaments, what type of margin of error do they have the rest of the season? Can they still make it as an at-large team? Do they have to win out of one loss, two losses?
Since they're ranked, I think they have a little bit of more margin than you'd think. So, for example, I think they each have 31 regular season games, which mean they could finish 30-1. And if they get upset and are 30-2, I feel very confident that they're making the tournament. Yeah. As far as how low they can go, if they finish like 25-6, and they don't have a lot of meat on the bone because they don't have a lot of meat left on the schedule. I think that's pushing it. So that is kind of our window. And then it becomes like if they finish 28-4 or 29-3, like I would have to do a deeper dive, but I think that's our range.
Okay. I think the range might be, can I make an observation here? The range for Charleston is probably a little less because if you talk about them finishing 27-5, you're talking about losing to some horrendous opponents. Whereas, you know, at UTEP, at UAB, at Charlotte, not that those are games that you wouldn't expect a tournament caliber team to win routinely, but if they don't win all of them, I still think that Florida Atlantic can be okay with a loss or two, three. I don't know.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Griggs. Especially with Florida Atlantic, you know, they lose these two games that I've highlighted here, UAB and Charlotte. They're not going to look awful on the resume. Whereas you pick any two losses from the Charleston, you pick their best two losses, Hofstra and UNC Wilmington. They're going to look bad on the resume. Now, of course, if Florida Atlantic loses twice to Texas San Antonio, it's a different story, but, you know.
And I think that's a good point, Chad. I think, you know, the recent examples are Murray State last year, who just had a couple losses, and Wofford in 2019 since the net took over. And they both got in on the 7 line. Both ended up winning their conference tournament, I believe. But I don't think Wofford had a win against the field. If Florida misses the tournament this year, and obviously North Texas probably won't get in at large, UAB probably won't get in at large, Florida Atlantic could be in that position. But the CUSA conference as a whole is performing as a top 10 conference. So that's much better than what Wofford had or what Murray State had. And so that's going to allow the cushion that you're talking about.
Yeah, there was a contingency team that year from the SoCon. I forget who it was. Was it Furman?
That was Greensboro that year.
It was Greensboro. Yeah. So, I mean, there was a team that got really, really close. But to your point, Murray State or Wofford would not have dropped four lines with a loss in the conference tournament at any point, even if it were the quarterfinal game. So you can certainly, I think Wofford was in on the first ballot before the SoCon tournament even started.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let's move over to final thoughts on Titel, because you've got a picture here. I'm going to start with you first here. Cause that does complete all the teams. You want to talk about this guy who's still cashing checks, right?
Since we're recording this on MLK Day, I want to take a minute to reflect on the state of minority participation in college basketball amongst coaches. Tubby Smith won it all in 98 at Kentucky. Since then, in the past 25 years, only minority coach to win is the guy on your screen, Kevin Ollie at UConn in 2014. Good news this year, several strong contenders. Kelvin Sampson at Houston, now Rodney Terry at Texas, who we didn't have even a month ago, and Shaka Smart at Marquette. The bad news, in a sport that has a majority of players who are African-American, we still have a majority of coaches who are white. I'm not sure if we can ever hope to have those percentages equal out one day, but as a famous man once said, I have a dream.
Delika.
That's going to be a little hard to follow up right here, but I do want to go back to Clemson right here that we talked about earlier that is now 7-0 for the first time in school history. This is a program that's been to, I think, one Elite Eight back in 1980, and they've also had one ACC regular season championship back in 1990 and also a 1997 Sweet 16 that probably could have gone even further had they been able to upset Minnesota in the tournament that year. Of course, that being said, they only have, I think, one win at North Carolina all time. So continuing to see some unlikely milestones for the Tigers program that's certainly a little overdue, and thumbs up to Brad Brunell, who's quietly been running a decent program down at Clemson.
My buddy Brad!
Rocco.
Yeah, just a couple of fun facts from the Southeastern Conference. So I didn't get mentioned that Alabama basically broke I don't even know how long the record is, but they fired 33 three-pointers in the first half against LSU and ended up with 54 attempts for the game, sinking 20, destroyed the Tigers. I think the game was like 46-14 at half. They won it 106-66. Just a Nate Oates special, five out, everybody shoots the rock. They had a couple sneak previews of this earlier in the year when they fired 46 against Jacksonville State and 35 against South Alabama, but this was a whole new level and against SEC quality competition. Just a dangerous, dangerous team with Brandon Miller out there for, you know, first and foremost, pulling up from, you know, whatever it is, 23, 24 feet out straight away and sinking triples. Just a dynamic team to watch. So check out the Tide if you haven't seen them play. And then the last note is Texas A&M. I was there in Gainesville the night when they left their uniforms at the hotel. And since that moment, they have been a different team. They are, as you mentioned earlier, winners of four in a row, all against the new coaches of the league, Golden, McMahon, Gates, and South Carolina's.
Paris.
Yeah, Paris. Thank you. Thank you, John. And so now they're sitting there 12-5, 4-0 in the league, still undefeated in the league. Florida's coming back to do a full circle game on Wednesday. Looking forward to seeing how that goes. Florida themselves has won three in a row. Hopefully I'm the springboard for both of them turning their seasons around. We'll see how that plays out.
He goes to every game, and now he springboards teams to wins. Griggs.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I just want to take this opportunity here to mention something. I know we're running low on time, so I'll keep this short. But with Florida Atlantic coming in, let me see if I can get this up. Oh, Chad, can you enable the screen share?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Should be up now.
Okay. Yeah. So with Florida Atlantic coming in, and us getting to mention them for the first time on the Hoops HD report, it is also the first time we get to mention one of the greatest things in college basketball, in all of college sports, in all of sports in all the world. Yes, it is the curtain. The CUSA curtain. It is beautiful.
Yes, it is.
Okay. A moment of silence for that.
Well.
It is amazing. We need a Big Sky team to get into the rankings so we can talk about the floor sweepers.
I don't even know what that was, but
that was the curtain.
It was the curtain. Yeah, I do have a final thought also. It's on a serious note. I do, you know, we have seen, we saw it this year so far already, more off court instances than I remember in many, many years. First with Mike
of Peake a tragic shooting, nature is going, that what,
absolutely tragic. Yes. Mike Peake incident involving New Mexico and New Mexico State, and then we just found out that Darius Miles, who had been out for the season for an injury for Alabama, but had been, you know, there with the team even on Saturday, there when it has been charged with homicide, with murder, and a shooting incident on late Saturday night, and this is just absolutely. It's heartbreaking to see this and to see all this gun violence involving college athletics of all things. And, you know, it's I don't even know what to say, but, you know, hopefully that this is the last we have anything like this for a very, very long time in this sport. But on that note, I guess on behalf of John Titel, John Stalica, Rocco Milligan, check out bracketeer.org, David Griggs, hopefully he won't be back ever again. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us.
What is that supposed to be?
Real soon.